Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to PhillyFanatics.com, Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. With me, Gordon Glantz. For those listening in archive, we're going to be doing the Eagles game first, Eagles-Steelers preview. But stick around. Like I said, if you're already listening to this, if you already know the result of the game, one, you can see how correct we were in our analysis, and two, stick around for some Flyers, Sixers, and Phillies talk coming up. Gordon, there are seven teams in the NFL that are undefeated, and two of them will be at Lincoln Financial Field today, and that's the Eagles and the Steelers at 2-0. What challenges do the Steelers present that maybe the Bears and Browns did not present the first 2 weeks for the Eagles?
Well, I mean, not to oversimplify it, but the challenge they present is that they're a very solid football team that I can't really say the same about the Bears. The Bears seem to, on paper, have made some improvements. You know, we talked about it last week on the defensive side of the ball. The Eagles were able to still, you know, without Zach Ertz, that they still take advantage of some things. And the Browns are the Browns, and they'll probably always be the Browns. So they're a much different team. I mean, they're an elite team in the league. I mean, they're, when we talked before the season, I had them going to the Super Bowl. And you know, they're playing like a Super Bowl team right now. They're a far cry from the Steelers team that the Eagles beat, I believe, 17-0 in the preseason. I mean, they didn't play a lot of their starters or even a lot of their backups in that game. So this is a completely different challenge, and they really present a lot of challenges on both sides of the ball. I would expect you know, a lot of pressure to be on Carson Wentz that he hasn't seen before. It's a 3-4. I know the Bears also played a 3-4. But there's going to be a lot of pressure coming from different directions. And he's going to continue to, you know, it's going to be a tough challenge for him. And then going the other way, I mean, they haven't had Le'Veon Bell that was when healthy and when he's head screwed on straight, maybe the top all-around back in the league in terms of catching and receiving and carrying a full workload. And they haven't had him, and with D'Angelo Williams, they haven't missed a beat. I think they're still leading the league in rushing. And, you know, Ben Roethlisberger has the reputation he has for a reason, and Antonio Brown is possibly the best wide receiver in the league. I mean, he's a guy that gets a lot of targets, and no matter what you do to him scheme wise to cover him, he's going to burn you. So they present a lot of challenges on both sides of the ball, I'm not saying it's impossible. You're playing at home; it's still early in the season, and that's when a lot of upsets do occur. But it's not going to be easy, but you know, that's okay. That's okay for them to, you know, go into the game and see what they have and see, you know, as a measuring stick and then go into their bye week and, you know, assess the damage if there is damage to assess.
Gordon, let's focus. We've spent a lot of time talking about Carson Wentz and the offense, the last 2 weeks. Let's focus on the defense because the Eagles defense has played really well in these first two games. But let's look at some of the challenges, as you said, that they face. First of all, Leotis McKelvin is out again for today's game. We haven't gotten the official inactive, but he's listed as out on the injury list given out the other day. The Steelers, you mentioned Antonio Brown, who is arguably the best receiver in the league. You look at their and Marcus Wheaton's their other starter, and then you look at their backups. You got Sammy Coates and Darius Hayward Bay, who would probably be, likely be starters for the Eagles. Without McKelvin there, and not that McKelvin's the reincarnation of, you know, of a top flight Darrell Revis, but you know, what's the challenge for the Eagles cornerbacks against guys, and can they handle Antonio Brown, Marcus Wheaton, Sammy Coates, and Darius Hayward Bay? How can they handle them?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's a couple of different ways you can go at it. You can just line up with your left corner and your right corner and just see where they line him up and maybe slide over a little safety help. Or you can just pick out a corner that could and think that maybe you can shut him down, which is, you know, I don't know if they have a corner of that caliber. McKelvin healthy would probably be the closest they would have to somebody trying to shut down, you know, Antonio Brown. And that would be iffy at best. I can't really see. Nolan Carroll, to me, had a good camp, and Actually had a pick six against the Steelers in the preseason, but, you know, I certainly wouldn't relish that situation, you know, saying Nolan Carroll on an island with Antonio Brown the whole game. So I would say the way you have to go, there's two ways, really. I think you just have to really rely on the safeties. The Eagles have a good pair of safeties, and Malcolm Jenkins and Rodney McLeod, you know, and you're going to have to you know, really just rely on to see where he lines up and give help. I mean, if Jalen Mills is on the field, I think they're going to line him up over Jalen Mills as much as they can. I mean, the Bears try to take advantage of that also. And then the real key is, you know, Roethlisberger gets rid of the ball quick, but he's not an overly mobile guy. You know, I remember a game here earlier in his career. I think the Eagles sacked him something like 8-9 times. It was, you know, he can get to him a little bit. So really, the key is, you know, shut down their running game to force them into more obvious passing situations. And teams, when the Steelers can run the ball like they have been running the ball, it just opens up the passing game for Antonio Brown and Roethlisberger as well. And then when there are, you know, when you do get, you're going to have to get pressure on them. And the whole defense of Jim Schwartz is predicated on pressure from the front four. You know, maybe they have to just, you know, throw some change-ups at him. Maybe you blitz the corner that's not covering Antonio Brown. Maybe you blitz a linebacker, you know. But really, aside from that, you know, once in a while, you really have to get to him with the front four. Just rotate bodies, keep him fresh. It's not a real hot day. I guess that helps. And you're going to have to get in his face. If you don't get sacks, you're going to have to, you know, at least tip passes or you know, make him hurry, go to the check down guy, whatever you need to do. You know, so really shut down the run, get pressure on him. I think that's probably more realistic than thinking anyone you have is going to be able to cover Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the Eagles are going to shade a safety over toward wherever Antonio Brown is. But then, of course, the question, you know, is can you handle the other guys? And, you know, they have some other good receivers and even tight end Jesse James. They signed a tight end during the offseason. I believe he got hurt. So Jesse James has sort of been the guy and has actually played pretty well. A former Penn State tight end, big guy, too. He's like 6'6", 6'7".
He's a real good blocker, right. And I think he's taken advantage of, you know, he's a guy that probably you wouldn't think of as a receiving threat, but, you know, the middle of the field's probably open for him a lot, and they've been taking advantage of it, and he's been catching the ball, so that's another guy that could hurt you.
Yeah. You talked about putting pressure, and I agree. I think, you know, we look at the Steelers and people talking about Roethlisberger and Brown and D'Angelo Williams. What a great backup running back to have in D'Angelo Williams. But I believe leading the NFL in rushing, individual rushing. But you know, you talked about getting pressure on the quarterback, and I think maybe the biggest difference between, or maybe one of the other big differences between the Browns and Bears and the Steelers is this offensive line, which is pretty good. However, at left tackle, a guy who I know you're familiar with because you are a student of the game and of the minutia of the game, but maybe one guy they can try to exploit, although he's done a nice job. And this is why organizations like the Steelers and Patriots are good every year. Their left tackle is Alejandro Villanueva, who, of course, the Eagles had in. Gordon, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't they bring him as a defensive end? Didn't Chip have him in here? Guys in the Army looking at a defensive end, 6'9", 320.
Yeah, it was kind of bizarre that, you know, I remember them bringing him in, and I actually remember him in Army. You know, he was, because he was sort of an anomaly being the size that he was. I don't think he weighed that much, but being the size that he was, you know, and he had a pretty good, considering Army barely throws the ball, I think he caught like 30 passes his senior year. You know, I thought, you know, he's a guy, if you bring him in, if anything, maybe you try to make him a tight end because he has the receiving skills and some athletic ability, and the Steelers took it a step further and you know, made him a left tackle. You know, why the Eagles, I guess they thought maybe defensive end because of his size. You know, in a 3-4, which they were playing, you know, under Billy Davis, you do want those down linemen that play next to the nose guard to be kind of tall to get their hands up, and maybe they were kind of looking at that. But it just seemed like an odd, you know, an odd idea. He must have thought it was, unless the Eagles were the only team offering an opportunity, he must have thought it sounded appealing to try to play defense, or maybe, you know, he thought it was the best opportunity to make a team. But, you know, from what I understand, you know, he got into the lineup there in Pittsburgh last year due to injury, and he has not relinquished that starting spot since then. And he's the left tackle, which is the most important job on an offensive line. He's the left tackle on one of the best offensive teams in the league. So you can't really call him a weak spot, I would say. So, you know, a lot of people talk about him because of his background. But I don't think he's a guy you can really exploit that much. You're just going to have to stay fresh and you know, wherever you can attack their offensive line, whether it's him, whether it's the guy on the other tackle or the guy or up the middle, you're going to have to exploit their, you know, it's just in the trenches, you're going to have to beat them or at least not get beaten badly. You know, you're not going to get pushed back on key running plays, or you're going to have to at least get out, at least collapse the pocket a little bit to force an early throw. And that can come from anywhere. I wouldn't necessarily call him, he's pretty established in the spot. I wouldn't necessarily call him a guy you could exploit. He seems like he's, you know, he hasn't relinquished his job since he's gotten it.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story. And the only reason I mentioned him as a possible guy to exploit, because up the middle with Marquise Pouncey at center and you got David DeCastro at right guard.
Right.
And you certainly can't exploit him. You're not going to exploit that, although that's a great matchup. I'll tell you the truth, if people want to watch an inside football matchup during the game today, I watch that interior line with Marquise Pouncey, David DeCastro, and I believe Foster's the other guard, Ramon Foster.
Against Fletcher Cox,
yeah.
Who's, you know,
yeah.
So it should be interesting.
Fletcher Cox and Benny Logan. That's a really – because if the Steelers can control that and run the football off the middle, it's going to be a long day for the Eagles.
Another thing, Eric, would be the offense. Mm-hmm. Obviously, sometimes the best defense is a good offense, and if the Eagles' offense can get first downs, we've talked about the importance of – first downs being just as important as touchdowns, and just maintain the ball when you get it. You know, change field, flip field position. Eat up the clock, keep their offense on the sidelines, and if you can, you know, at least get field goals. If you get in the red zone, try to get touchdowns, and hold on to the ball. Don't take your chances when they come, but don't take a lot of chances. Just move in healthy chunks and get your first downs and keep their offense on the sideline. I think that might be another key to keeping Pittsburgh's offense from having a big day.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. Time of possession, despite Chip Kelly's comments, will be important today, because I think if the Steelers control the ball, it puts a lot of pressure on Carson Wentz and the Eagles make big plays. And like you said, if the Eagles control the ball, it keeps some of those big weapons from the Steelers off the field. So, Gordon, got a prediction for today's game?
I think the Eagles are a work in progress, and I really thought winning the first two games was important, and I thought they were so important because I saw this as a really tough matchup. I don't necessarily see them getting blown out, but I do see a loss. I see 24-17 Pittsburgh wins.
Okay, and I'm on record in my preview. I should look at the preview, but I think it's 33-20. 33-24. In fact, I'm going to look at it right now to make sure I'm consistent. Yes, it is. 33-20 Steelers over the Eagles. So we both have an Eagles going 2-1, which isn't certainly cause for alarm or disaster, that's for sure. All right, let's switch briefly to the Phillies before we get to the Flyers and Sixers. And Phillies winding up the season here. I don't even get into the Mets. It looks like the Phillies bullpen is worn out, but that's not where I want to go. This is what appears to be the final week in the Phillies' career of Ryan Howard. And I guess just want to take a moment or two here. And actually, he came back in the lineup. He had his knee drained, and he hit a home run the other night. And he will finish up next weekend. The Phillies are back home against the Mets for the final series. What are your thoughts on Ryan Howard and his career here as he literally limps to the finish line?
Yeah, well, that's a good way of putting it. But you know, and I think in the short term, I think we're going to think more about the way he ended his career here. But really, when you kind of gain perspective as the years go by, you really when you remember people, you remember. Look, we still remember the Broad Street Bullies. We remember all those guys. We remember all the guys on the 82, 83 Sixers. We remember all the 80 Phillies. There are people who I wasn't even born yet, and I can tell you, I can name you the whole roster of the 60 Eagles. You know, you look at guys who were on championship teams and what role they played, and I don't think there's any way we could sit here and say that whole time period that, you know, had the pinnacle of winning the World Series in 2008 would have happened without Ryan Howard. So, you know, during that time, I mean, you're talking about the guy who led the league in RBIs three times with huge totals. I mean, it was a 149, I'm looking at his career stats right here, 149, 146, and 141 he led the league with RBIs. Those are humongous totals right during that period that we're talking about. You know, he was an MVP. He was a rookie of the year. He won a silver slugger. I think he won a couple home run derbies at the All-Star game. I mean, it's just a shame, I think, when you really kind of pull back and analyze it with Ryan Howard, that he got a late start because Jim Thome was here, and he probably should have been up at least a year or two earlier. And I guess you could argue maybe that he could have ironed some things out earlier in his career that kind of hurt him, you know, in terms of, you know, not being able to hit, you know, right-handers or, you know, the striking out all the time. You could playing the field, maybe he would have gotten more experience earlier in his career. That might be a stretch, but just being up here for his career totals and how he could have contributed and how he could have cemented his legacy a little more. You had Jim Thome here, so you can't really argue with that because he was a great player, and really you could say Jim Thome is almost the guy who built Citizens Bank Park for the Phillies. I mean, he kind of brought them some respectability, but it kind of held Ryan Howard back in the system. And then, you know, in the back end, he had injuries, and that really kind of, you know, was the death knell in his career in terms of really being a premier slugger, like I'm talking about with the, you know, leading the league in RBIs, leading the league in home runs, you know. So, you know, I really didn't think I'd be thinking here, talking about a guy, the way his career started, who'd be finishing up his career with the Phillies, and I guess it remains to be seen where he'll end up next year and if he'll play, you know, with less than 400 career home runs. I think he's at 380 right now. So, It's kind of bittersweet, but I think as time goes on, the bitterness will fade a little bit, and the sweet will be there. I will personally remember him fondly if I have, you know, a grandson one day who sits on my knee and asks me about him. I'll say positive things. You know, if he wants to know about the team that won the World Series, he'll be one of the first players I mentioned. So, you know, I think it's a positive legacy when you look at it in the long term.
Yeah. 58 home runs that one year just jumps out at you when you're looking at his career stats. And, you know, and actually he's had a pretty good second half this year. He might have played himself into a role with somebody somewhere next year with the way he's played in the second half. Again, I don't think he's an everyday player, certainly not in the field, but maybe in the American League and DH or, you know, or at least get a part-time job, one of those spots where he's at least platoon-type player, I don't know. But I think he's maybe open to my second half of the season. Jordan, I hadn't planned on asking you this, but you sort of going there to the end, I think. From that 2018, let's exclude pitchers, because some of them still it remains to be seen. But you're talking the core of that team, the Howard, Utley, Rollins. Are any of them Hall of Famers?
You know, I would think you look at shortstops a little different with offensive numbers, and I think Rollins had pretty good offensive numbers for a shortstop. You know, when he was an MVP one year, I would think he would have a shot more as one of those veteran committee type guys, you know, not immediately get in, but I think he would have a shot, and I would think Utley the same way. Again, for middle infielder, big numbers. I think what he does in LA, I think will help, even though it's the tail end of his career. I think, you know, how much he helps that team will go a long way as well. Aside from that, you know, excluding pitchers, like you said, you know, Jason Wirth, Victorino, Pat Burrell, Pedro Feliz. But, you know, Howard, Utley, Rollins, I guess they would all have chances. You know, with home run hitters, you look at career home runs and you know, 380, you know, you know, it's not 500. So,
that's
you know,
pretty
struck me. Go ahead.
No, I was saying,
I would think Howard would. Go ahead, Eric.
Go ahead. I was saying, when you listed the home run totals, it made me think of it as like there's a decent chance that I don't think any of those three get in. But I think you're right. The shortstop and second baseman, the numbers get looked at a little differently offensively than the first baseman. And for, you know, among the power guys, Howard doesn't doesn't quite make it there for career numbers. Like I said, he got off the late start. Whereas, I think Utley and Rollins have a better chance than Howard does, although I'm not sure any of them get in.
Yeah, and also defensively, Rollins and Utley were pretty good players defensively as well. I mean, Rollins won several gold gloves, I believe, and I'm not sure about Utley, but, that's something that gets looked at as well. So it would be interesting with Howard to see what happens. Would he want to go through, what would be the likely scenario of signing a minor league contract, after the kind of career he's had, and trying to make it somewhere as maybe a part-time DH, or would he just, be content and saying, look, I played a whole career in one place, that rarely happens anymore, and kind of calling it a career and moving on. It would be interesting to see what happens. I will say with him, I mean, during that stretch, when he got hot, when he was, all home run hitters kind of go in peaks and valleys. When he got hot, I mean, he was just unstoppable. They talk about he couldn't hit right-handers. It didn't matter if they were right-handed, left-handed. If the pitcher was throwing it through his eyeballs, it didn't really matter. I mean, when he was on fire, he could really carry you through a whole stretch of games, until he cooled off again, and that was huge. So, I don't know. You always have to see the eye test of when he was in a prime of his career. I think it would be a little different for the Hall of Fame. But when you just pull back and look at numbers and he kind of tailed off so precipitously at the end of his career, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see where he ends up next year. Maybe he hasn't written his final chapter yet. But looking forward to seeing next weekend. One of the few things I'm looking forward to is the Phillies next weekend and seeing Ryan Howard. Hopefully, hit a couple home run or two and get a nice ovation from the home crowd.
I hope nobody throws a beer at him.
Yeah, I hope not, too. And I will have to say, I just want to throw one thing out. This is a tough situation for him this year. And we talked with Kevin Cooney at the beginning of the year on how Ryan Howard would handle this. And I think Kevin was accurate in his preview or in his thoughts. And that, although I said it would be a tough situation, but Ryan Howard's handled this year really well for, a difficult situation. Guy got platooned a lot being out of lineup. So I give him credit for that as well. Seems to be a good guy and has handled it well.
You got to think of the culture of the locker room. I mean, a lot of younger players. And he's the old guy making more than probably 10 guys combined. And, it probably wasn't easy for him when you get behind closed doors there. But he seemed to, like you said, handle it as well as you could handle it.
Yeah, I mean, I know he was upset when McCann said he wasn't going to play much the last month. But other than that, he's kept pretty nice public profile. At least, like I said, behind closed doors we don't know, but at least in public he hasn't been a problem. And we haven't heard that he's been a problem behind either. So, Gordon, a couple young teams out there, the Flyers and the Sixers, a little different stages of development, but the Flyers actually have a pretty crowded roster, but their camp started this past week, Veterans Reported Friday. Give me three guys, or three storylines, however you want to think about it, that you're going to watch for during training camp. And they do play Monday night against the Devils. They got three games coming up this week. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, one storyline is the obvious one, the young defenseman. Ivan Provorov, we've discussed this before. He really almost has to be on the team. I mean, if he goes back to juniors, I guess he would set all kinds of records for points in a season by a defenseman and, all that type of stuff. But how much would it help his development? It gets to the point he really needs to be in the NHL. In the AHL is not an option for him. So as long as he proves that he's ready, I think he almost has to be on the Flyers. And if he's on the Flyers, he needs to probably play. I mean, if he just has a healthy scratch, but they're just kind of carrying him on the roster so he doesn't go back to juniors, again, I don't know how much that helps. So it's sort of an interesting situation. And I guess the storyline I'm going to see is I would presume they're going to give him a lot of ice time and see how he handles it. And I would hope he kind of really cements himself as a guy that they want to see play a lot when the season begins. I think, I've watched him play on TV a couple times. NHL Network has played some junior hockey. And to me, and I know this could sound like a bold statement, and he's at a different stage of development that Gospospierre was, but he could be everything that Gospospierre was last year and maybe a little bit more. He's a little bigger, might be a little stronger in his own end. And it might be apples and oranges a little bit because Gospospierre is such a dangerous offensive defenseman. To have another guy of that caliber that could be, in the talk for, Rookie of the Year and everything. You know, I would think he'd be one of the people, if he is with the Flyers and plays significant ice time, he would be obviously a guy that would be, you know, in the running for that. And the Flyers have never had that in their history. So, you know, I don't want to hang that pressure on them, but, you know, obviously that's a top-end goal that I'd be looking for. So that's one thing. And behind him, some of the other defensemen. Where's Samuel Morin? Is he close? Is he close enough to even be on the roster? You know, and a couple of other guys they drafted, I don't think, you know, are going to be quite ready yet to be on the Flyers. But I'd like to see where they are. They're probably going to get chances to play in the preseason games. I'd like to see where they are, and maybe somebody surprises them. And I'll, you know, another storyline I would say is the forwards. They have some young forwards. I guess Konechny probably has, and Travis Konechny, maybe an outside chance of being on the roster this year. I'm sure he's more talented than some of the guys who will be on the roster. I could probably rattle off three or four off the top of my head right now, but again, you're looking at the age and the experience and you know, the ice time he would get, and do you want a guy who's playing on a third or fourth line or still having a chance to excel on playing on a top line at a lower level? But, you know, he's a guy, I guess it is open for him if he has a great camp to maybe start the season with the Flyers. And they have some other guys that they've drafted, some other forwards that are exciting, you know, Albe Kubel and, you know, a couple of guys they drafted this past year that, you know, you'd like to see what kind of camps they have. Dark horse guy, I don't know if he's in the camp, actually. I haven't looked at the roster, is Oscar Lindblom. He's a Swedish guy. Who plays in the Swedish Elite League and is actually a really good player there. Finished a year with the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, but there was some talk he may just go back to Sweden for another year if he's not ready for the Flyers. So I don't know if they can have him in camp and then send him back to Sweden or how that works. I haven't yeah. really looked for his name on the roster, but he'd be another guy. He's not in camp. All right, so maybe they made that decision already. Yeah, but he's definitely a guy to watch for. He's a big guy, he can skate, and they took him in the fifth round, which is really, you know, again, when you're making draft picks like that in the fifth round, and they're pretty sure that he's going to be a NHL player at some point, you're doing good things. So I'm looking for that, and I want to see how the lines shake out. I want to see, you know, it seemed like the lines were in a pretty good place when the season ended last year, and I want to see what line combinations Hakstol tries in the preseason. If he's going to mix that up again, if he's going to try to put Voracek back with Giroux, if he's going to keep Simmons with Giroux, and you know, those will be interesting things to watch for as well. Who he tries to put with who, which will tell you what he'd rather do. But then sometimes just chemistry works a different way, and certain guys just work well together, and you end up having to change the lines. So, but I think what we'll see in the preseason is who we'd like to see playing with each other, and then it'll probably work itself out in terms of who actually does mesh well with one another. So, and then, you know, I guess one more storyline, not to go haywire here. I think there's probably some jobs to be open at the bottom end of the roster with forwards, who's going to be, like, you know, the fourth line forwards exactly, and those with the one or two extra forwards that make the roster. So that's something else to watch as well. They signed a few guys who were sort of like on the cusp of NHL, AHL type level, and you know, and they have, you know, the Van de Veldes and Bellemars and guys like that. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of plays itself out as well.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. In terms of the guys making the team, I think the guys that really have a shot are Provorov and Konechny. The other guy, you know, so those are probably the only guy I think that might make the roster that might surprise people. It was a shot, let me say. I really haven't seen him, but I've just read about him. Is Roman, I believe it's Lyubimov. I'm not going to pronounce his name. Lyubimov. The Russian guy. He's a little bigger. I think he's a little older too. He's just a guy
right.
who, you know, picked up on that. He had a real good international competition, and he's a guy. You know, the Flyers could use help on the wing, and he could make
yeah.
it. But other than those guys, I think I'm looking at the next guy, sort of. You know, it's like those are the three guys who might have a shot to make the team, but I'm looking at, like you said, the next level. Like Travis Sanheim is probably going to be in the AHL this year. Samuel Morin, how close are these guys? How close Philip Myers, you know, how close is he? What's he? I know he's coming off an injury. They have some really good gun goalies I want to see play. Some of the forwards, which they certainly can use help. You know, how close are these guys? So I'm looking at this year, but I'm also looking, you know, a year or two down the road and seeing, you know, who are going to be the Flyers of the future. So lots of good stuff. Flyers do play tonight, Monday night against Jersey. They have games Tuesday and Wednesday, and I think Saturday against the Bruins. So something to watch. We will do the Sixers and the final thoughts on the other side. So Eagles game today, Gordon and I both on record having them lose, but check out PhillyFanatics.com to see the result later and the analysis. So thank you for listening. Those listening live will be early again next week, too. Talk to you next week. All right, Gordon, let's look at another young team that starts Tuesday, their training camp out in Stockton College for the last time, because I assume they're going to be at their new training facility in Camden next year, and that's the Sixers. So, let's same thing. Let's look for – they're a really young team. I looked this up, by the way. Elton Brand and Bayless have one less year of experience than everybody else on the roster put together. I'll say it again. Elton Brand and Bayless have, who they signed as free agent, have one year less experience than every other guy on the entire roster. So that'll be a number today this week or something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme. Yeah.
And by the way, one of those guys, I think it's Gerald Henderson, is, has like 6 or 7 years in. Well, most of the other guys are either none or one or two. What are you looking for in Sixers camp? Give me one or two things you're going to be. Let's do two that you're looking for in Sixers camp.
Yeah, well, I mean, the most obvious one that I think everybody's going to be looking at is Joel Embiid. We haven't even seen him play, summer league, anything. Last time we saw him play was, at the University of Kansas. And how he plays is going to dictate a lot of things. I don't think for the long haul they're going with the three big men. And, how he plays is going to determine where they go with that. So if he's healthy or even shows a little bit. I mean, he doesn't need to be the dominant player right now. I mean, he was even going to be somewhat of a project even if he had played as a rookie. So being away 2 years on top of that, I wouldn't expect him to come right in and average 20 and 10. But you'd like to see him, have some good games, have some good moments, and I'd like to see him get minutes in the preseason and not be babied too much. I know you don't want a guy getting re-injured in preseason, but if you don't feel safe enough putting him on the floor in preseason games, what does that say for his long-term prognosis playing, through the rigors of an NBA season? And the other one's obviously, I'll put them together, Ben Simmons and Dario Saric. I think a lot of their long-term fortunes rest with both of these guys, as much as they do with Joel Embiid. And, they're both curiosities. I mean, Saric was being billed as, one of the top players in Europe that they were sort of waiting on to bring over and he played over there 2 years and you hear a lot of good things about him and played pretty well in the Olympics. There's really no reason that, he can't have a nice impact for the Sixers, whether it's sort of like a sixth or seventh man. But certainly you want to see him in the rotation, playing multiple positions. And then obviously Ben Simmons, first player in the draft, considered a franchise guy. But I think there's enough other storylines that he doesn't have to carry as much pressure as maybe somebody else in his situation in another town would, because people are looking at Embiid. They're almost looking at Embiid as if he was a first pick, and they're almost looking at Saric the same way. So it's almost like the three of them are in the same boat. So those are some of my storylines.
Okay, I'm with you on all of them. Of course, the Okafor and Noel. How's Brett Brown going to play these guys together? We won't necessarily find that out this week at camp, but we might say a little bit of it, the different experiments. I'm going to go a little off the main guys, and that is Saric and Simmons. Neither one of them, especially Simmons, is known for his outside shot. So one thing for the Sixers, all these big guys, and you got penetrators like Simmons, and they got to dump the ball off, and someone's got to hit outside shot. So I'm going to watch. Training camp during a drill is one thing, but I want to watch when they start playing preseason games. I want to see someone consistently hit outside shots, because if you can't, the other teams, once we get to the actual regular season, they're just going to play off these guys and sag back in a little bit and almost dare the Sixers to hit outside shots. Okay, we'll stop your penetration. Go ahead and kick it out and see if you can hit that shot. And if we don't have anybody able to do that for the Sixers, the inside game becomes a lot less effective. And so does Ben Simmons, for that matter, and Saric. That's it for this week, except for final thoughts. So, Gordon, why don't you start us off with final thoughts?
Okay, I got three quick final thoughts. I kind of missed this last week, and I kind of had it saved up for a final thought, and for some reason it skipped my thought when we got into the phase. But, a Flyer alumnus passed away, and the Flyers are very strong with their alumni, and Bob Daly, who I don't think really stuck around. A lot of ex-Flyers stay around the area, and so you see them a lot, the Bob Kellys and the Joe Watsons and guys like that. And I don't think Daly really did that much. I don't know if he played much in alumni games or anything like that. But really, I mean, when you got – he wasn't on the Cup teams, but he kind of came right after the Cup teams when the Flyers were still really good in the 70s. And what, for my money, was the best Flyers team, the 79-80 team that went to 35 games without a loss. There were some ties in there, so it wasn't straight wins, but that was still 35 games without a loss, which was phenomenal. He was their number one defenseman. He's the guy who logged the most ice time and you know, was on the point on the power plays. And, you know, he was a big guy. And now, you know, big defensemen are commonplace, but in his time period, he really just stood, towered over everybody else. And shame just, you know, if anybody dies at any age, but he was a relatively young guy, and he passed away of cancer. And I just, you know, he's not somebody who gets mentioned a lot. When people do, like, all-time Flyers teams, he doesn't always get mentioned as one of the six defensemen who would be on it. And he would definitely be on mine, and I just want to thank him for the memories. He was really wasn't a great player, but he was a very good player, playing some All-Star games, and I think he deserves mention. There's a guy named Bart Scott, and he played linebacker for the Jets, and he came out called Carson Wentz, I think, a fraud or something like that, and fool's gold, you know, after a guy plays two games. And, you know, my reaction is, you know, who's Bart Scott? Yeah, I know he's a former player, but there's thousands of former players. Who's he, and why does he get to have an opinion if he's not even up close and personal? So, Bart Scott, keep your opinions to yourself. And then today, even though I'm rooting for the Eagles, there's a Steeler I'm rooting for, and that's Tyler Matakevich from Temple. I'm a Temple fan, and he's, you know, the best defensive player ever to come out of Temple. As long as it doesn't affect the outcome of the game, I hope he dresses today, and I hope he does something positive. That as long as it doesn't affect the outcome of the game, maybe he can force a fumble, but the Eagles recover it anyway, or something like that. So those are my final thoughts.
Yeah, maybe he'll force the fumble, and Green Beckham will catch the rebound and run in for a touchdown or something.
Exactly. Yep.
I'm going to follow up on your final thoughts real quickly, and one is, it's funny you had it, because I just was looking at it. Sometimes, time to time, I write these things down, and just I saw it this morning, my little all-time Flyers list that I probably did a couple months ago, and sure enough, Bob Daly, I do have Bob Daly right in that. You know, I'm allowed to carry scratch defenseman, so I have him right in that 6 or 7 spot.
okay.
On that third pair. Yeah, he was a terrific player. Not necessarily a nasty, tough guy in the way we think of grocery bullies or stuff, but a pretty tough guy. He played with a really bad shoulder injury. He played one arm for the Flyers for part of that time and was still really good. And like you said, he was their best defenseman, always a good guy, and he will be missed. Gordon, what was your second final thought? I can't believe I just blanked.
Yeah, real quick, just on that, I don't count Pronger as a Flyer. I guess that's where a lot of that, you do that. I count him as a Flyer because he really didn't spend enough of his career here. If you would be on somebody else's all-time team, you can't be on the Flyers' all-time team. So that might be where some of the discrepancy is. So
you might be looking at my list, Gordon, because I actually have Pronger in parentheses
Literally,
I'm at your second final thought, not Matakevich. What was the other one on?
Bart Scott.
What a fraud! He's allowed to have his opinion, and that's okay. And by the way, Fool's Gold is a really good bad movie. If you want to watch Fool's Gold with Matthew McConaughey, it's really good. Especially if your wife will enjoy it. I'm not just saying your wife, Gordon, but people, you know, it's a good, stupid movie to watch with your wife, because McConaughey's shirtless through most of the movie. But the thing that annoyed me about Bart Scott was his comment that let's see how Wentz plays when he gets hit from, that he hasn't gotten hit any. And some of these studio analysts are really good and really go watch film and things. And some of them just go out there and spout opinions and don't really watch the games. They watch highlights. And I think Bart Scott has been revealed as a fraud who watches highlights rather than games, because if you watch the Eagles games, you've seen Carson Wentz get hit too often.
Too often,
It's not that he hasn't taken hits. He's taken too many hits. So you know, like I said, he's entitled to his opinion, but at least the opinion has to be, you know, it's like I tell my kids in my classes, everyone's got an opinion. The key is how do you support your opinion? What evidence do you have to support your opinion? And Bart Scott looks like an absolute fraud.
He implied, Eric, that the college teams could beat the Cleveland Browns, and as bad as the Cleveland Browns are, I don't think any college teams would be able to beat them. So, I mean, that's another stupid comment he made.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous. So he's just trying to – he might try to get attention, and maybe it succeeded because he got it, but for the wrong reasons. I also want to throw out unrelated, really tragic news today. Jose Fernandez, the ace for the Marlins, died in a boating accident, both discovered overnight, and the bodies. Sad day in baseball, yeah. So 24 years old, the ace of their staff, and the Braves-Marlins game was canceled today. So,
yeah, I hadn't seen that. Well,
yeah, it's really awful news. I guess for a final thought, I'm going to follow up with something a little lighter. And Gordon, don't take a personal offense at this, but, you know, it wasn't enough that Temple won yesterday, but I saw some Temple people had to take joy in the absolute stomping that Michigan gave Penn State, taking joy in another team's misery. And
I took a lot of joy in it. Guilty as charged.
At the same time, there were Penn State fans who, despite getting stomped by Michigan, took joy in Notre Dame getting beat by Duke. And before we get on everybody's my high horse, and I was about to get on my high horse and say how ridiculous it is that people take satisfaction and joy in other teams' defeat rather than their team's success, I was thinking, you know, when the Cowboys lose, it makes my day, regardless of what the Eagles do. So I'm not climbing on the high horse, and I'll say it's all right. You can root against teams. It's just fine. That's
it's
it
only
for this
sports.
Week's show. What's that? Say again?
It's only sports. That's what makes it fun.
That's right. And you can root against somebody else. That's just fine. And so, like I said, I thought it was ridiculous until I thought my own personal thing. But you know what? I do it too. So, and I have to say, I was following that Duke Notre Dame, and was not displeased with the outcome. I'll just say that it didn't make me feel any better about the Penn State loss, but it gave me something else to counterbalance it, I guess. So that's it for this week's show. Enjoy that Eagles-Steelers game. Like I said, those of you listening archive, see how good our analysis was and how close we were in the final score. That's it for this week's show. We'll be early again next week, like I said, next Sunday. Eagles bye week. We'll probably do a Phillies wrap-up. Who knows what else will happen this week. Something always happens. For Gordon Glantz, thank you, Gordon. Great job today. For Gordon Glantz, I am Eric Fisher. We'll talk to everybody next week.